Attention to the book of Job. We're looking at a subject that does have something to do with our speech, subject of handling criticism and how criticism comes to us through our mouths. I look at Job as being a person who had friends for a while, but they turned into critics. And so tonight, if you'll go with me there to the book of Job, we're going to just leaf through some of the things that he experienced, and we're just going to get a little understanding, hopefully, of what Job may have felt like and put herself in that situation and see what his responses could have been, should have been, and how he grew from that. So we talk about handling criticism constructively. We recognize that criticism comes. We recognize that we have given critical comments. We recognize that we each need to be aware of what criticism is doing to others and what it's doing to us. So Job was a man who was a man of integrity, and I'm just going to leaf quickly through some verses. In chapter 4, we see him having a speech from Eliphaz, and that man Eliphaz was one of the friends of his, but now he's calling him to task. And in verses 7 and 8, he said, "Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same." Now what he's saying to Job is, you're a liar. Is that criticism? Unjust or just? It's criticism. There's a reason you're in the state that you're in. And so he argued to Job and said, you are in this situation because of some sin. In chapters 4, 6, 5, 6, 7, deal with Eliphaz's statement that Job has sinned. And that's why he's in this situation. Now, we go to chapter 11, and we have another of his friends. And this friend also becomes a very real critic. And I'm just going to pick verse 6 out. It says in Job 11:6, what Zophar's comment is, he's speaking to Job, and he's saying that he would show thee the secrets of wisdom, that they are double to that which is. Know therefore that God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserveth. So there's something going on in your life that has caused this. Verse 7, canst thou by searching find out God? Canst thou find out the Almighty unto perfection? We go on and we go to chapter 22. We'd have a lot we could pick out of here, but let's stop at chapter 20, actually. 20, verse 11, Zophar, another friend, is saying, Job, your bones are full of the sin of your youth. His bones are full of the sin of his youth, which shall lie down with him in the dust. Though wickedness be sweet in his mouth, though he hide it under his tongue, though he spare it and forsake it not, but keep it still within his mouth, yet his meat in his bowels is turned, it is as the gall of ass within him. He has swallowed down riches, he shall vomit them up again, God shall cast them out of his belly. How would you like to be talked to like that? How would it make you feel? Here you are, or surrounded by people that you think care about you, and all of a sudden they're speaking like this. Chapter 22, verse 5. Eliphaz says in another round, is not thy wickedness great, and thine iniquities infinite? For thou hast taken a pledge from thy brother for naught, and stripped the naked of their clothing. Thou hast not given water to the weary to drink. Thou hast withholden bread from the hungry. But as for the mighty man, he had the earth, and the honorable man dwelt in it. Thou hast sent widows away empty, and the arms of the fatherless have been broken. Therefore snares are round about thee, and sudden fear troubleth thee, or darkness that thou canst not see, and abundance of water cover thee. Here he is, surrounded by his critics. And at some point, if we go back here in chapter 17, we see Job's response is not what it should be, but it's a very real response. We know what this kind of response is like. We know that when somebody criticizes us, we have to either decide, am I going to be tough and take it, or am I going to melt under the attack, and what am I going to do with it? I'm going to let it bother me. Job says here in Job 17:1, my breath is corrupt, my days are extinct, the graves are ready for me. In verse 11, he says, my days are past, my purposes are broken off, even the thoughts of my heart. He is totally distressed because of the criticism that he has just received, because of the experiences that he has. In chapter 19, verses 2 to 6, he says, how long will ye vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? He's speaking to his friends. These 10 times have ye reproached me. You're not ashamed that ye make yourselves strange to me. And be it indeed that I have erred, mine error remaineth with myself. If indeed you will magnify yourselves against me and plead against me my reproach, know now that God hath overthrown me and hath compassed me with his net. Here he's reacting. He's coming back against those who are critical. Have you ever done that? I have. Somebody's criticized, and I've fired back. Why are you saying this? This is something that I don't deserve. You feel it very deeply. And Job was there. But Job came to some places where he was aware that he had not done what they were telling him. He was not in the situation that they thought he was in. And we come now to some examination that he does in chapter 31. And we'll just skip through here. But he asks himself some questions in chapter 31. I'm going to just point out the if-then statements of chapter 31, or some of them. He says here in verse 5, if I have walked with vanity, or if my foot hath hasted to deceit, let me be weighed in an even balance, that God may know mine integrity. If my step hath turned out of the way, and mine heart walked after mine eyes. Verse 8, then. Verse 9, if. Verse 10, then. Verse 13, if. Verse 16, if. Verse 19, if. Verse 20, if. 21, if. You see what I'm doing? If I have done this, he's examining himself and asking, is this really accurate? There's one thing I'd like us to remember tonight is when criticism comes, we need to evaluate it and ask, is this factual or is this an opinion? And if you can get that straight, you're going to start to deal with your critics in a completely different way. Is this a fact or is this an opinion? I don't really care what kind of car you drove in here tonight. I'm not going to criticize you for whatever kind of car you drove in here because it doesn't really matter. It got you here. Okay? So if I go out there and say your car is ugly, does it really matter? Is that going to destroy you as a person if I say your car is ugly? No, because it doesn't really matter. Yeah, it might be a little hard on our pride, but it doesn't really matter. But Job gets done evaluating this. If I've done this, then I deserve this. If I've done this, I want to be corrected. That's the attitude that he came to at the end of the book of Job. He said in verse 40, he said, you know what? To sum this all up, after my examination, I'm going to say, let thistles grow instead of wheat if I have done wrong. It'll be a sign that I've done wrong if there's thistles that grow instead of wheat and cockle or stinkweed instead of barley. And Job ends it. Then God comes into the picture in the book of Job, and God starts asking him questions and saying, Job, you're going through this whole experience. People are criticizing you. But think about yourself. Who are you? And he asks him, I think it's 79 questions. He says, Did you make the rain? Did you make the snow? Did you set the earth on its pillars? Did you do this? Did you? And Job had to answer, no, 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 no. And he comes to the end of himself and he realizes, you know, it doesn't matter what his critics said. It really matters how God is going to view him, and it matters what his view of himself is in relationship to God. And so Job comes to the place where we see that he is confident that God cares about him, but he's confident that he is vile. In verse 4 of chapter 40, he said, "Behold, I am vile. What shall I answer thee? I will lay my hand upon my mouth." It doesn't matter anymore why he lost all his things. Now he's got a perception of who he really is. And isn't that where we need to be, brothers and sisters? We need to come to the place where, who am I really? Between me and God, who am I? And so we talk about handling criticism constructively. We have to come to this place. And God told Job, he said in chapter 42, he said after Job abhorred himself and repented, he said, "Okay, Job, now I want you to go and I want to pray for those who were your critics." All right, let's talk about two other people and then let's go to a list of 10 things that I think are essential for us in handling criticism constructively. If we apply at least some of these things, I think it will bring us out in a good, solid place. Thought of the example of Moses when he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt and they're standing at the edge of the Red Sea and the army is behind them and they have nowhere to go. What's the first thing they say? "Moses, why did you do this to us? Why did you bring us here? We would rather have worked in Egypt as slaves all of our lives instead of be killed right here at the edge of the Red Sea." Moses was criticized, but he knew without a shadow of a doubt what God was leading them to do. And he didn't know how God was going to deliver, but God did deliver, and he was ready to press on. The second example is that of David. When his father sent him out there to the army to see how his brothers were doing and to take some fresh food for them, remember the Goliath came out and defied the living God. And David said, "What's this all about? What's going on here? Why is this man, you know, defying our God?" And his oldest brother, Eliab, put him down for that. And he said, "Who are you? My little brother. You're coming here and you're telling us that we should deal with this Goliath." And you know, David, he's determined to do something about this. He's thinking, you know, this just can't go on, the defiance against God. And Eliab calls him a proud man and one that's up to naughtiness. That's what he said. And David could have said, wow, he could have melted under that, his oldest brother railing on him, and he could have gone home. But he thought about that, and he thought about his responsibility to God, and he honestly evaluated that, and he decided he is going to do something about this, and God used him. So there's a difference here. We can either melt under the pressure, or we can learn from the criticism. Somewhere there's something between being so tough-skinned that nothing ever gets to you, and something about just melting under it. There has to be some middle ground here. And so that's what we're going to talk about here next. Constructive responses to criticism. And when I talk about criticism tonight, we're talking about criticism that is unjust, criticism that is malicious, that is judgmental. We're not talking about constructive criticism tonight. We're talking about criticism where somebody is out to shoot missiles at you. They're just out to do you in for whatever reason. And so constructive responses to this kind of criticism, the criticism that's unfair, that may be sarcastic, that it's definitely uncharitable. Number one, Be a good listener to your critic. Job listened to his friends. Maybe there's something to learn. Maybe, just maybe, they'll tell you something you don't know about yourself. I was in a week of revival meetings in another state, and somebody came up to me at the back of the church, a lady, and she said to me, are you left-handed or right-handed? I said, well, I'm right-handed. She said, well, there's a lady in this church that thinks you're left-handed. And I'm thinking, well, what's that matter? She said, yeah, she evaluated you while you were preaching, and you always use your left hand to do illustrations, and you're using gestures that show that you're a person in your right brain instead of the left brain, and she had me all analyzed during the sermon as to what I was. She said I was left-handed. I thought, why'd she do that? Why didn't she listen to the message? So it didn't really matter what she thought, did it? Except the next time, it was a week of meetings, so next time I get up to preach, I'm thinking, who is this lady and what's she thinking? What's she going to find with me tonight? Does it matter, the criticism? You know, when my wife says I use the word a lot, or I use a word a lot, or a gesture. Now, I had a time in my ministry, I was always saying, look at this nugget of truth. Well, I got old. Nugget of truth. Right? So we need that. Listen to your critic. Maybe you'll learn something about yourself. Hear what the critic is saying. Proverbs 19:20 says, hear counsel, receive instruction, that thou mayest be wise in the latter days. It doesn't matter whether I'm left-handed or right-handed tonight. I am right-handed. It doesn't matter what that lady thought. The point is, maybe she would have told me about something else that I did that was offensive. And we want to know about that. We need to know about that. We're representing the Lord Jesus Christ. We're not wanting to be in the way of the message getting through. Number two, thank the critic. Easy. Really? Thank the critic. You know, when you pray for your enemy, your attitude changes about your enemy. Do you know that? And when you thank your critic, your attitude changes about your critic. It will do something for him or her, but it will also do something for you. So, when that next criticism comes, listen, be a good listener. You might learn something. Secondly, thank the critic for what they have expressed to you. That doesn't mean you need to say anything about their criticism, but you do need to acknowledge that they gave you something. Say thank you. Number three, give time to think before committing to a response. Do you remember yesterday the illustration of the eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and how the judge needed to decide who is going to put out the eye of the person that put out your eye? You couldn't do it because you had emotions involved with it. When somebody is critical of you, you have emotions and you need to give time to think before committing to a response, unless it's a situation like King David and Nathan, who came to him, and King David was smitten immediately and knew that it was wrong. Then we can say, yes, you are exactly right. I have done wrong. I need to be corrected. Thank you for being one who cared about my soul. Number four, pray for discernment in what they have said. With what they have said. Again, is it an opinion or is it a fact? I had a man that gave me some heavy criticism, and I wrote down on a 3x5 card the three things that he heavily criticized before. I posted it in my study where I could see it. And that was there for a long time. I'm talking about months. And I would pray about those three things that he said. One of them was, Dale, when something doesn't go your way, you kind of pout about it. He was throwing it out in a nasty way. He didn't say, Dale, do you think you pout about it? Could I walk beside you and help you to see yourself? No, he didn't say it that way. So he was the kind of critic we're talking about here tonight who didn't really seem to care about his comment. But he said, you just go and pout about it. No, I don't go pout about it. But maybe I did pout about it. I needed to pray for discernment about that. He said, you kind of like to have your own way. Well, whether real or whether perceived, I needed to evaluate that. I needed to discern, was that true? Did I always want my own way? And so he really helped me to think through who I was. I needed to pray for discernment. And the same with the critic who throws something at you. You listen to what they say. You say thank you. You give a little time to think about it before committing to a response back to them. And you pray for discernment and ask, is this an opinion? Is this a fact? Is it important or isn't it important? Does it really matter whether I use my left hand for illustrations? It doesn't really matter. It's not important. I don't think it is. Maybe it can be conscious of that. I still don't think I use my left hand I think I use my right hand too. You have to tell me. I don't know whether I do or not. But the reality is some things matter and some things don't matter. And we can spend a lot of gigabytes just thinking about, the word gigabytes? A lot of brain power just trying to process what somebody said to us when, hey, they said it. If there's something there, take it. If not, leave it. And let's remember that our friend may have a blind spot. He may have impaired judgment. He might not know all the facts. Okay? That lady may not have known that I had a shoulder problem that night and I was just using my left hand. She didn't know. I didn't have a shoulder problem, but I'm just saying, what would she know? What didn't she know? And ask the question, does the criticism that's coming come because the critic is trying to elevate himself? Now, we don't make a quick judgment about that, but we have to be honest and ask the question, why might have they said that? Is there some other motive behind? Maybe you're not even the problem. Maybe they just needed something to put the blame on it. So some of our critics are just distractors. But I want you to remember that many of our critics are our teachers. And so the person that is your teacher, you want to value. So pray for discernment. Is this person here, God has brought them into my life to be my teacher, or is this person just a distractor? I think that David's oldest brother was a distractor. He wasn't going to go out there and stand before Goliath, and so it looked bad for his younger brother to be willing to go and do what he should have done. I think it was just a distractor. So there's a process of discernment. Occasionally, we may need to have some friends help us in the discernment process, but be careful. When we go to another friend to try to discern what is going on here, you don't want them building a case up against the critic. That's not what we're trying to do. We're saying we need your perspective, and we need to honestly evaluate that criticism that has come. Number five, we need to clear our conscience. We need to discuss this, we need to evaluate this, and then we need to say, okay, I'm going to leave that. I'm going to clear my conscience. If there's any wrong, I'm willing to do it. Job did that when he said, if I've done this, then I want this to happen. Then I'm willing to face this consequence. But our conscience has to be clear. Run to God's word, claim the promises of God's word, know what you're supposed to do, what is right and what is wrong, and clear your conscience. Number 6, express love for the critic. The man that gave me those 3 things that I had on my bulletin board for a long time was a man that I needed to go and practice the holy kiss with him on a regular basis in church before my bitterness or my feelings subsided toward him. I didn't want to be bitter. I didn't want to be upset that he said that. But I didn't think he knew what he was talking about. But I needed to go and express love to him. And I needed to make it a point to meet him in church. Express love for the critic. Number 7, I don't know how to say this, I'm just going to say it this way, reject fear. Reject being paralyzed by criticism. Fear is an invitation to defeat. David went and defeated Goliath. He didn't let the criticism paralyze him. He didn't let his older brother intimidate him and drive him or move him. He instead realized what God wanted him to do. Number 8, be thankful. Be thankful for criticism, because if it is a teacher for us, if even just a little bit of it is a teaching moment for us, then you're going to be a different person, and self-examination is always good. So this criticism has called us to more self-examination and to prayer, which then leads to more dependence on the Lord. And Job did that. Job came to the place where he went back and he saw that God was going to be more real to him through this experience, and he could trust God to new levels. Be thankful for the criticism. Number 9, be committed to what is right. Accept responsibility for your words and your actions, or your lack of the same. Be committed to doing what is right when you see what the problem is. It's hard to say I'm sorry, as was just expressed in the previous message. We say we're sorry to someone, there's a trust that's built, and we can show that we are desiring to be what God is asking us to be. Number 10, release what's behind and move on. Release the criticism instead of being bitter. Yeah, it's unjust. Yeah, it was done in a slanderous way. Yes, it was just plain judgmental, meant to tear me down. But we've done the same, haven't we? Most of us have done the same. And to release it and to go on, and if there's something that we're made aware of in the future, that's great, we will evaluate it again, but we need to go on. We need to release what's behind and move on. If we have failed knowingly, then we correct that and go on. I'd just like to give a couple things that are of value to criticism. And I think we see the value of criticism. It will help us in how we deal with it. Number 1, criticism deals with our pride. And brothers and sisters, pride is something we will always have to fight with in life. We think we have it licked, and it comes right back and seeps in like water into sand. It's right back again. And we need to have other people tell us when there's that spirit of pride in our life. It's about like bad breath. You can't see it or smell it on your own. You need somebody else to help you. And so we need to see that criticism brought us down off our pedestal. It brought us to trust in God. It brought us to the level of others. It's easy to set ourselves up on a pedestal. And we should be knocked down when we're up on a pedestal. Oh, I have more knowledge, or I have more wisdom, or I have better looks, or I have whatever. Those things are destructive. God can't use us in those situations. So I see criticism as something that deals with our pride, and we need to value that criticism because of that. Number two, I see that criticism checks our sensitivity to other people. We can become pretty insensitive to each other. And when we're hurt, we want people to be sensitive to us. Criticism checks our sensitivity. And what we give tends to come back in a greater amount than we've given out. And so if we're receiving a lot of something, ask, am I giving a lot of something? The critic is in a dangerous position because it reveals something about himself. Remember the warning that don't criticize someone else or judge someone else before taking the beam or the speck out of your own eye. Okay? That distorts our perspective. But criticism checks our sensitivity to others. And our spiritual progress is in exact proportion to our ability to evaluate ourselves and to check our sensitivity. 1 Corinthians 11:31 says, if we judge ourselves, we should not be judged. So we need to check where we're at with that. Number three, criticism puts a problem out in the open. As our brother said in the first message, so many times we want false praise or we want flattery. Turn with me yet to Proverbs chapter 27. A couple of my thoughts for these points are coming from here, and I should have had you turn to them. The points in criticism deals with our pride comes from verse 3 of Proverbs 27. The thing of criticism checks our sensitivity, verse 4. Criticism puts a problem in the open, verses 5 and 6. It says, open rebuke is better than secret love. Open rebuke. Probably what somebody said to us is something that other people have been thinking about us. How would you like to know that 10 people are thinking that you go and mope when you don't get your own way? But that one friend is the one that told me, the one critic told me, Dale, you go and mope when you don't get your own way. In reality, there probably were 10 other people that thought the same thing but just didn't want to say it. It's possible, right? And isn't it better to get it out in the open so that we can deal with that? So open rebuke is better than the flattery that was talked about, than secret love. And faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. So criticism Is it of value as a tool of sanctification in God's hands? Can the criticism that we receive be viewed as something to raise our awareness of our imperfections? Yeah, but it hurts. Verse 14 of Proverbs 27 says, "He that blesseth his friend with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, it shall be counted a curse to him." In other words, the extravagant praise is going to be a curse. Well, if extravagant praise is a curse, what is criticism? Is it safer than extravagant praise? I think we can be ruined by praise and saved by criticism. But we don't view it that way. We say criticism destroys us and words do hurt. We say that little child's thing, you know, about sticks and stones may hurt my bones. Is that what it is? Or break my bones? But words could never harm me. Well, that's false. But the reality is that we need to have a perspective on what those words were. As mature people, how do we handle this criticism, these things that have come, and have we been discerning of that? Have we had others that could help us discern, is this something of importance in my life that needs to be corrected? And can I be saved by the criticism? I found in my life that my greatest critic, which I could name to you tonight, has probably done me more good than anybody else. So you think tonight of one of your critics and think God may have them there to do you more good than another friend. Doesn't make it right to be critical in the sense we've been talking about it tonight. But as long as there's people, there's going to be critics. And as long as we live, we're going to have to be careful about being critical like we've talked tonight. But when we are criticized, our real character comes out. The character of a person can be measured by how they respond when they are wronged or accused falsely. What is your character? What is my character? May God bless you as you try to deal with the critics that come in your life, the statements of criticism that come. And may God give you wisdom to stand and say, there's something here that I need to consider. There's something here that I need to evaluate. And maybe it's for my better. So God bless you.